All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call to order the Wednesday, November 5th Parks and Recreation Commission meeting. Can we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Lehman.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Long.
Here.
Commissioner Adams.
Here.
Commissioner Cassiopeia.
Here.
Commissioner Coburn.
Here.
Commissioner Curtis.
Here.
Commissioner Glenn. Commissioner Kiever.
Here.
Commissioner McKenna.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Okay, thanks. At this point in the meeting, we will have public comments for something that's not related to the agenda, not on the agenda. Do we have any public comments? Come on down to the microphone right here and state your name for the record, please.
That one? My name is Brad Troltzen, and I'm a member of the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club, and we have a small request. We have a simple request to make of the Parks and Recreation. The shooting range currently does not have a restroom. At the present time, if people need to use the restroom, the adjacent bushes have to fill that need. But doing that is unsanitary and illegal, and for those reasons, a restroom should be available for the public to use at this facility. Thank you. That's it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, you know the standard answer to that is funding.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of funds to put anything into the parks. But we do have a long-term master plan of items, and it's something we can pencil into the master plan.
One thing we were considering was renting a porta potty from, like, Nevada John's. And then have that, because we have matches there 10 months out of the year, and it would roughly bankrupt the club if we had to pay for it. So we were hoping that maybe Parks and Recreation could help us with that. It would be roughly $100 a month for the 10 months.
Christian McKenna?
The Republican Women Shooting Club also was raising money for the same purpose.
Yeah, we've talked to them.
Okay.
Really, we're supposed to have limited discussion at this time, but I'd just like to point out or mention that Scott Fairbrook and Vern Cron and I have been in conversations with the Nevada Department of Wildlife, and we're looking at some options to get restrooms up there.
How long would this take?
Well, at this point, we're looking at the possibility of several different types of improvements to that area, one of them being restrooms.
Okay.
We were not looked at a facility out at Winnemucca. Their facility out there, and we've got a couple other facilities that we're looking at as well. But one of the ideas that we've discussed is the portable porta potties on a trailer, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Sean, one more thing.
Okay.
This is probably way out of order, but that's fine. Is the shooting range going to be closed on November 7th?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's a range cleanup.
Just so everybody knows, the range will be closed on November 7th, so the range can be cleaned. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Have at it.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman, Commissioners. I'm all for this idea of putting in a latrine facility over at the shooting range, especially for the ladies. It makes a big deal over at Bailey Pond. It makes a significant difference. It's appealing, it's sanitary, and honestly, for the girls and guys, girls and the women especially. I don't mean to be sexist at all about this, right? But it really helps the situation greatly. The porta potty idea, the Nevada John's idea, if there's a way to do something like that, and with Endow, if there's somebody that I could speak to at Endow that could help facilitate that, please let me know, Roger, and let's see if we can do something like that, okay? Thank you kindly.
Okay, thanks. Uh-oh. Any other public comments at this point? Okay. So The next item is approval of minutes. This is the October 7th meeting. I've got the minutes up here. Been able to review them slightly. Does anyone have a motion to approve these minutes?
I'll make a motion to approve them.
Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second.
No, what if?
We got 2 seconds.
Okay. All in favor of approval of the minutes of October 7th, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I wasn't at the meeting and I haven't had a chance to read them, so I think I should abstain.
Okay. Commissioner Kiever will abstain. The rest of us have approved those minutes. So we will move on to item number 2, which is modifications to the agenda. I've spoken with Roger on this one, and there are no modifications to the agenda, which means we'll move on to meeting item number 3A, which is a possible action item to recommend to the Board of Supervisors to change the name of the Edmonds Sports Complex to Pete Livermore Sports Complex. So Roger will tell us about this.
Sure. Well, this is kind of a bittersweet item that we're presenting to the commission tonight. You have in your packet, you have a letter from the Carson City Youth Sports Association's president, and basically requesting, along with the Parks and Recreation Department, requesting that recommendation be made to the Board of Supervisors to change the name of the Edmonds Sports Complex to the Pete Livermore Sports Complex, of course, in honor of Assemblyman Pete Livermore, who died on Monday, October 20th. As the commission knows, Pete's got a long history of public service in Carson City. That, you know, there's been much discussion about this over the last couple of weeks, and I don't think there's a need to go over it all, but he's got a long history of 20 years of history or so of being active in the community, you know, serving as a two-term assemblyman, served on the Board of Supervisors for many years, 1998 to 2010. Being a trustee on the Carson Tahoe Hospital, being a member of the Subconservancy District, and one of the original supporters of the Quality of Life Initiative. And, of course, we all know that Pete was one of the original founders of the Youth Sports Association and served as president of that association for many years, for 24 years. Pete around town was known as Mr. Youth Sports of Carson City, and we all know that he was a tremendous supporter of sports, recreation, particularly for the youth in our community. So we feel it would really be appropriate that the complex be named after Pete. Pete was one of the early supporters of the building of that complex, spent many countless hours down there coaching youth and particularly girls softball and other type of activities. And so this is being brought forward for your recommendation to the board. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer. I'm sure there are probably some people in the audience that would like to speak regarding this matter as well.
So I just have a couple questions up front. Yeah, obviously Pete was on this commission for quite a while and definitely a huge contributor to the community. Edmonds, who is Edmonds? Do we know who that is?
You know, I personally don't know. I mean, you know, the name Edmonds Sports Complex was, I'm sure it was named because it was the proximity to Edmonds Drive, just a block or so away. But if there's anybody out there in the audience that know who Edmonds was, Donna DePaul is shaking her head affirmatively. I'm sure you'd be happy to tell us what you've done.
Don't keep it a secret.
Yeah, if you could, I'd be curious to know.
Donna DePaul. I checked on that today, too, because I was concerned. I don't, you know, want to step on any toes either. 20 years ago, we brought this forward to the commission, and there was never a concern then as far as the name Edmonds. As far as we knew, it was named after the street. And I had asked a gentleman at the cemetery today who had lived, his name is Tim, and he has lived here since 1966, and he doesn't remember an Edmonds family, and they didn't show, to my knowledge, any records of the Edmonds family, per se. So it is my understanding, you know, it could have and most likely was at one time a family. A lot of names of streets were that way, but as far as we know, it's not going to impact it.
Okay, yeah, that was just a question I had, being as that's another family name, Edmonds. The other question is, was there any consideration to renaming Governor's Field rather than Edmonds, because he was quite a bit involved in the programs over there?
No, actually, you know, probably all the comments that I heard in town since Pete's passing was in reference to Edmonds rather than Governor's.
I would say, too, the entrance into Edmonds is Livermore. I don't forget if it's Lane, but it's the road into it's already named after him.
That was because of action by this commission when Pete left Parks and Rec, God knows when. It's been a while. So they gave consideration in naming the park at the time, but just the road was named after him because he was still alive.
Okay, so anyone else on the commission have comments at this point?
Mr. Chair, maybe, you know, I should read the letter from Greg Davis, Youth Sports Association, at least read it into the record, if I may. Okay, to whom it concerns, the Carson City Youth Sports Association unanimously voted at their board meeting on October 22, 2014, to support the renaming of the Edmonds Sports Complex to the Pete Livermore Sports Complex. We all know the history behind Pete's efforts to make the complex what it is today, and we strongly support this effort. We feel the renaming is very appropriate to honor a person who dedicated much of his life to the youth of Carson City. Please feel free to contact me with any questions or concerns regarding this issue, and feel free to share this with the Parks and Recreation Board if needed. Sincerely, Greg C. Davis, Carson City Youth Sports Association President.
Okay, so yeah, we've got that read into the record. Anyone else on the commission? I guess we could open it up. Commissioner Curtis.
Sorry. Yeah. I just want to say a couple words just in regards to Pete. It was a big loss to me personally. One of the first people I met in Carson City, and one of the first people that challenged me as a Democrat in terms of why I was thinking of doing whatever it was I was doing, and enjoyed every minute of it. We had great conversations, and he will be so well missed by everybody. It's not just, you know, certain political types or even people involved in sports. Everybody will miss him.
Scott.
Yeah, before we have public comment, for the record, Scott Fehrenbrick, Deputy Director. I echo Commissioner Curtis's take on the whole thing. I myself, like many of you and many in the community, have suffered a personal loss, you know, because of, you know, the passing of Pete. I can tell you that the conversation at the last Carson City Youth Sports Association meeting was one that everybody to a person, it was a unanimous vote that they agreed that, yes, Edmonds Sports Complex should be named the Pete Livermore Sports Complex. He was the driving force behind building that complex. Everybody in the community knows it, and, you know, Pete has always been there for everybody with youth sports. He's been there for the Carson City Parks and Recreation Department. His legacy is everywhere. Everywhere you go, you see something that Pete has done, something that Pete has accomplished. And so this is really an opportunity for us to give something back to Pete and to Pete's family for everything that they've done for our community. Pete, I don't think that the Edmonds Sports Complex would be there if it wasn't for Pete. And we may not have the Quality of Life Tax Initiative if it wasn't for Pete. So this is really an opportunity for us to do something, to make something right, and to give back to Pete because he's given so much to us.
All right. Other commission members? Yeah, I mean, yeah, make no mistake, I knew Pete a little bit myself, and it'd be hard to argue that anyone else did much more for the town. I guess the only, I've said this before, is name recognition that's solidly in people's minds. You say go to Edmonds, you go to Edmonds. Now I guess we say you go to Pete Livermore to meet. So I guess that would be the only small concern of mine, is it's very well recognized as is, and perhaps we would name it Livermore Sports Complex rather than Pete Livermore. I don't know. I'm just not sure how it would come out in the community in the long run, how it would be referred to. So,
I think over time, I think naming it the Pete Livermore Sports Complex is absolutely appropriate. I think over time, you know, people tend to shorthand things, and people would refer to it as the Livermore Fields or Livermore Complex. But I think officially to have his name on the sign, I think would be, as Scott would say, would be the least we could do for, you know, for the efforts he put into making sure that that facility was built and to honor him and his family.
I will say, too, that we've adapted to name changes in the past. I mean, Centennial became John D. Winter Centennial Park. I mean, just most recently, with the passing of Marv Teixeira, now we have the Marv Teixeira Pavilion. Everybody knew it as the Pony Express Pavilion. So, like Roger said, people will adapt. People will figure it out.
Yeah, I'm sure they will, but everyone I know still calls that Centennial Park. I've never heard almost anyone call it John D. Winter's Park, so... It's just something to throw out there. Everyone calls that park Centennial Park. Anyway, commissioner comments. So this would be the appropriate time to open it up to public comments on this matter. Come on down.
I'm Ronnie Hanneman, Executive Director of the Carson City Chamber of Commerce. And on behalf of the Chamber Board of Directors, we highly hope that you will vote to change the name to Pete Livermore Edmonds Park. I can tell you personally, that was his signature park. He loved all the parks, and he was very instrumental, as you said, Roger, in question 18. And in Governor's Field, but anytime we would take a leadership class down to look at the parks, it was Edmonds Parks where we always met Pete, and he was the proud papa of that. I think that names, it's always too bad that we do this posthumously, or however you say that, you know, after one is dead. It should have been when he was still alive. I think that people do adapt, as you said, Roger, whether they call it John D. Winter's Centennial or Livermore Park or whatever, people do adapt. And he was a fixture in this community. Most people know him, knew him, miss him, and I think this is appropriate. And we highly recommend that you do support this. Thank you.
Ronnie, just a correction that you mentioned Pete Livermore Edmonds Park, but I think you meant
no.
Pete Livermore Athletic Complex, right?
Pete Livermore Athletic yeah. Complex, yes. Okay. However you want to name it, we are behind it. Okay? Thank you.
So, quick question while the next public comment's coming up. I was just going to bring up a comment. Maybe Roger knows this one. So this is mostly a comment to you, Roger. Do you know John D. Winter's Centennial Park? Maybe I wasn't here for the discussion, but why did we keep Centennial in the name of that park versus just calling it the John D. Winter's Park? Because, yeah, that's a point bringing up Pete Livermore Edmonds Park would be the same as John D. Winter's Centennial Park.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly why Centennial Park was left in there. Might have been because of the concerns you had that, you know, a point of reference that people already understand that as being Centennial Park. Personally, I think John D. Winter Centennial Park is quite a mouthful. But I think Pete Livermore Sports Complex is much more straightforward and, you know, easier to deal with than the John D. Winter Centennial Park.
And, yeah, I guess this is getting sidetracked, but at some point we might want to revisit pulling Centennial out of there to recognize people. Go ahead.
I'm P.K. O'Neill, resident of Carson City for 34 years, and you're newly elected assemblyman in taking Pete's place. I'm speaking more as a resident than anything to do with State Assembly, and some of the questions have already been asked and answered. We have, I just want to reiterate, it's human nature to shorthand. The John D. Winters Centennial is always will be centennial. When I first got here 30 years ago, plus 30 years ago, and was taking my children out to play at the Edmonds Park, I couldn't find it because people actually were saying, well, it's the Livermore Park. And I saw the street sign, Edmonds. I got on Edmonds, went south like they told me, and I kept looking for this park. I saw the road, Livermore, and never figured there was a park over there until I actually got Dan and went up Snyder and saw it. And so I think actually people have been calling it in some ways Livermore Park. I think it's appropriate to call it Pete Livermore Sports Complex. When I spent time with Pete regularly and his family, I know what Pete put into that park. His, if we could have, I would have offered to say that we had buried him there, actually, because his heart and soul was there. And I think it's only appropriate, and I want to tell you that even up to the last few days, Pete constantly talked about the quality of life that he gave in that park and the sports, the youth activities for that park. And as I said, I knew that actually as Livermore and had to learn it as Edmonds when I started to referee and play there regularly. So I think it's only appropriate we're going back to what it should have been originally. And that's my thoughts on it for you, sir.
Okay. Point taken. Yeah, I think the point that Ronnie made, it's too bad it wasn't named Pete Livermore Sports Complex from the get-go. Would have recognized him then and had some sticking power, but that's water under the bridge. So, okay, more public comments.
Again, Donna DePaul for the record. I would just like to say a couple of things. If you want to shorten the name of the park, I'd suggest it's Pete's Park, because everybody knew Pete as Pete. And he has the only license plate in Nevada that says Pete. And he's very was always very proud of that and honored to hold on to it. And I would even go as far as saying I'd call it Pete's Park before Livermore Park, and because we got Livermore Road, if you want to shorten it. And when I was at the cemetery today, I had a chat with Pete, and he was in favor of this also. I talked to him about it and said what was going on, and I said, you know, buddy, it's 20 years later, but it's okay. We're going to hopefully make it work. And I was one of the founding members also with Pete on the Question 18 Quality of Life Initiative. And there was five of us. And Pete was exceptional for working with together. We all left the commission at the time. There was all of us had left the Parks Commission to get funding for our parks. It was so important because we never had anything. And we couldn't give people what they needed and wanted when the citizens came here. And Pete said, we've got to do something. And that's how we ended up forming the group and getting it passed by the voters. So I would just like to say, as a former commissioner, as a former friend of Pete's, and he was a very honorable, good man, and I would be honored, and I know his family would be very honored to have him, his name on Edmonds Sports Complex, and I agree with everything else that's been prior said. He was very instrumental in making it happen. Thank you.
Any commissioner comments? Is there more public comments? Okay, who's got the motion? Joe.
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors to change the name of the Edmonds Sports Complex to Pete Livermore Sports Complex.
A second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So that carries forward.
Thank you.
Yeah, and again, I think all of us on the board definitely, on the commission, definitely recognize Pete's efforts in town and worthy of that recognition. So, Pete's Park. Okay. Item 3B, this is a possible action item to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval and acceptance of the Shoals Ranch Landscape Maintenance District petition for the planned Shoals Ranch development as presented by Manhard Consulting. Roger.
I'm going to kick this off and kind of explain what we're doing here. I'm going to ask Chris Baker, would you like to come up to the mic as well? And when Scott Fehrenbrook gets back, I'll ask him to come up too. He's been very essential in the formation of this landscape maintenance district and working with Manhard in the petition. A few weeks ago, I guess at the last meeting, Chris Baker was here and gave a presentation on the improvements for the Shoals Ranch development. So now you have a good idea of what the development's going to look like. The other part of this, as part of the development agreement, Manhard is the developer is basically required to submit a petition for the landscape to form a landscape maintenance district. And I sent you all material on this, about a 70-page document, and you have it there with you. And I also gave you, we emailed it to you, and we also gave you a, tonight I also gave you a hard copy of it. And when I sent out the draft petition, we also sent out an ordinance, so you could kind of cross-reference the ordinance with the petition to see how closely they came to meeting the requirements and criteria in the petition. Tonight we're not asking for action on this issue. We're really asking that that we get some input from you, maybe answer some questions to give an opportunity to kind of run down what is a landscape maintenance petition or landscape maintenance district in the petition, what are the requirements, and a little bit about how the process works. So I'm going to kind of refer to my staff report here a little bit, and then I have some additional comments. And I would just like to say that both the consultant, Manhard Consulting, and the Parks and Recreation staff realize that this is not a finished project. This is a draft. We think it's a good first step. What we hope to do is take the input that we get from you folks tonight, meet with the consultants again. We're looking at trying to have a final draft completed by November 14th. When we receive that from the consultants, we will forward that on to you via email. We will also have a paper copy if you would prefer to have a hard copy of it. And we want to bring this back December 2nd for formal action and a recommendation from the Park and Recreation Commission. And then after that, we will bring it forward to the Board of Supervisors on December 18th. So anyhow, attached is a copy of the working timeline also. That was included, I think, in the information that I sent you. But the purpose of this meeting, as I mentioned before, is to acquire input and comments from the Commission that will help in completing the final draft, which will be brought to the Commission, as I mentioned before, December 2nd. 2014 at the Park and Recreation Commission meeting. Landscape maintenance district is defined as an area within a future or existing residential development that has by municipal ordinance the ability to assess property owners for city maintenance of landscape improvements contained within the borders of the district. Developers are allowed to request the formation of a maintenance district through a petition process. Again, the purpose of a landscape maintenance district is to provide, through the cooperation of petitioners of maintenance districts in Carson City, well-maintained and attractive parks, recreation facilities, trails, landscaping, open space areas that provide the citizens general welfare and healthy recreational opportunities. And that's right out of Chapter 17 of the Carson City Municipal Code. Assessments are based on the maintenance costs for the improvements and are assessed to individual property owners. The cost to the... And then there's another issue we're going to talk here, jump ahead a little bit. We're going to probably discuss a little bit about how the residential construction tax figures into this. But we met with Manhard Consulting yesterday. We had a long meeting with them. there were some concerns that we brought to them, and they pretty much agreed and with our assessment of the concerns. There were some clarifications in terms of terminology. In your packet, you have a landscape maintenance district petition, and then you also have a landscape maintenance district agreement. And we wanted to make sure that some of the verbiage in both of those documents were complementary and, you know, were the same. We asked that there be some attention given to making it a little bit more readable, understandable. Now, we know that this is a legal document, a legal agreement. So, Jennifer, no insult intended here, but we know that attorneys have to draft legal agreements, and attorneys get a little bit wordy, but our intent is to try to make this as plain, simple English as possible, given the terms that it is a legal document. I thought you were going to have a rebuttal there. One of the things that we actually requested, and Manhard came to the same conclusion that we had, was that we simply have page numbers added to it. If you went through this document, you try to cross-reference, you're going back and forth, and it's hard to kind of find where you are and keep the location where you're at, looking at while trying to move forward into the document. We also asked for a table of contents. They're going to submit that as well. So they brought back and they listed 9 items that we had talked about yesterday, and I hand that out to you as late material that's in front of you. So I'm going to go over those for the record. And the first one is, of course, page numbers will be added to the submittal package. A table of contents will be added to the submittal package. Effort will be made to achieve consistency between the petition and the development agreement. And that's what I mentioned before in terms of the wording and the verbiage. Assessments begin. One of the things that we talked about in quite some length is sort of defining when the assessments in the landscape maintenance district would take effect. And so we want some clarification on that. And so Manhard's attorney, Elizabeth Fielder, has submitted this to us, and she has assessments begin with respect to the whole project upon final project acceptance of phase one, landscape maintenance district improvements, provided no land is subject to the assessment until a lot is created by a subdivision map, at which time the lot is subject to assessment amounts and must begin to pay that assessment amount. The other thing we touched on was Carson City will assume the maintenance obligation of the landscape maintenance district land and the landscape maintenance district improvements for a landscape maintenance district phase of the project upon the final project acceptance of such phase, with the phases shown on Exhibit C2 in your petition. We felt like it wasn't really clear in the document of when we would actually take over the landscape maintenance district improvements in terms of maintenance. And so we asked them to clear that up, and this is what we agreed upon yesterday during our meeting. The obligation of the developer on the warranty for the landscape maintenance district phase will be 1 year from final project acceptance of the landscape maintenance district phase of the project. There were some questions about some ambiguities in terms of what the warranty, how the warranty was stated. The billing cycle for assessments will be the same as billing cycles for real property taxes. This was not clear in our first reading of the document, so we wanted to nail this down. We also consulted with Al Kramer, the city treasurer, city county treasurer as well, and received his input on this. Assessment amounts will be prorated for partial years. For instance, a lot is created by a subdivision map in the middle of the fiscal year. The lot is only responsible to pay for the time period from and after the creation of the lot. So if a lot is created in the middle of the calendar year, they would only be prorated, only would pay the assessment up to July 1st. Assessments are bailed out July 1st every year, along with the property taxes. The petition in Exhibit G, which is a financial plan to the petition, will be revised to reflect this. Exhibit C2 will be revised to include greater specificity for dimensions about the landscape maintenance district area and improvements. There's a section in there that's Exhibit C2 that shows the properties, the landscape maintenance district properties. We felt it was important. In fact, Susan Dorpansky from our planning department has been involved in this review. She felt like it was important to have the dimensions or the acreages of each one of those properties noted on the maps. And then finally, recital G in the petition will be revised to state that landscape maintenance district land in subsequent phases will be clearly delineated on subsequent maps as either landscape areas within street right-of-ways and in common area. Again, this is more of, I guess, probably a planning issue than it is a park and recreation issue in terms of the landscape maintenance district. Comes more from a planning perspective. But really, there are the properties at this point, is the way I understand it, is really going to be divided and defined into two main areas. One will be landscape street right-of-way areas, and the others will be common areas, which include all the other little pieces of property, the basins, the retainage areas, and, of course, the neighborhood park. And I think I have that one correct. Is that correct?
Yeah. The reason Chris Baker and Eric told me to write it, the reason for
Chris Baker, Manhart Consulting, for the record. The reason that's going to be further expanded in Recital G is the way the parcel configuration started, the backbone roadway, which is Racetrack Road, was actually its own parcel already. So when we went in and recorded the first subdivision map, you couldn't have common areas for that right-of-way portion above and beyond the current parcel. So we had to expand the language to include landscaped areas adjacent to that backbone roadway, and then everything further created, which is really all the common elements that I discussed last month, those are all going to be called common area on the new parcel or on the new final maps.
And there are still a couple outstanding areas in here that haven't been addressed in the handout that I gave you, the late material, but we're still working. I think we have a common understanding of verbiage for lighting. Lighting is mentioned in the petition. That is an issue we're still going to work at, defining lighting, what type of lighting is included, and what the lighting standards are. And then we're also going to be addressing residential construction tax. All that will be brought and will be completed in the final draft that will be presented to you in December on December 2nd. Questions or comments?
Yeah, I know it was like 76 pages, so I don't think any of us read all of it, but this was more just the draft, kind of get it on paper, have us look at it. Does any commissioners have any comments on it? Yeah, I know the staff recommendation was no recommendation. I did talk with the folks that own that parcel right over the Douglas County line. And you said that the theme was kind of going to be a Western theme of sorts?
No, we were just going to try to keep a universal theme. And since we're going, I mean, Shoals Ranch is now it's the working name. Okay. Ultimately, when things are built out, you never know what it's going to be. But I would envision that overall theme is going to be maintained throughout all the four phases.
So, yeah, the fellows that own that parcel in Douglas County, they said they're going to go with the prison theme to go with the prison around there. At least that's what he told me. But, yeah, in fairness, I'll leave that one alone.
Bars on the windows?
Yeah, they're going to go with the prison theme. like as you kind of said, they're kind of waiting. So there's really not going to be much going on right across the street on the Douglas County side for the most part. They're waiting to see how this development turns out. So you guys, like you said, are ready to roll, and they aren't. So, Commissioner Curtis.
I have a couple of questions, not exactly related to the subdivision and all of its intricacies, but this is the first one that we've seen for a long time, and it's a big one. And so I was curious to know a little bit more about how the process works in terms of collecting fees. So other than the maintenance district, which is kind of, going to be paying for it afterwards in terms of continuing maintaining the area and not putting that burden on the city, and the residential construction tax money, which is $1,000 per unit, which is going to go towards building the park, as I understand it. What other fees are being collected for this?
Again, Chris Baker for the record. As far as I understand, the only impact fees are the residential construction tax, and then there is your standard permitting fees and your hookup fees for water, sewer, et cetera. That's really everything that's required by Carson City at this time. I can state the improvements are all going to be paid for by the developer, both the LMD improvements, the park improvements, and any of the backbone infrastructure. So above and beyond that, we will just pay the – we, I use loosely – Shoals Ranch LLC will pay the required, you know, hookup fees and everything else.
What are the hookup fees? How much are they?
I don't know.
The city at one point really reduced them down significantly after the 2007-2008 Great Depression, and I'm not aware of the fact that they brought them back up. It used to be that I think for a standard single-family unit it was like $4,000 or something. I'm curious to know if those fees are still down in the, you know, 100 range or whether they've been brought back up. And this, you know, it's not your problem, but it definitely is my problem because we have infrastructure needs in this community and we lack capital funding for some of that. And it seems to me that if you take $4,000, let's say, per unit times 400 units, we're getting ourselves some good money to help us for future capital expansion of our plant, our sewer plant and our water plant. So my question is, what's been done about that? And I don't know if our supervisor can enlighten us or not.
I don't even know if it's appropriate because of the open meeting law, but no, I don't have any information for you.
I think the fees are already set. So again, that's probably not appropriate. It's off the agenda item today, but if you would like to know what fees are for hookups and that for permits, you know, I'll try to get that information and forward it to you.
So fundamentally, this is just edits in like the legal beagle stuff that we didn't fundamentally change anything that we looked at relative to the overall plan and what you were doing. It's just editing, right?
That is correct. It's more editing, clarification, and, you know, a little bit of wordsmithing, and I guess also I should say probably some definitions, trying to define what terms mean.
Yeah, I think again, Chris Baker for the record, I think what's reflected here is I think getting into this being that it was the first LMD in Carson City, in concept it seems relatively simple. I'm sure by about page 4 of this you realize it's not all that simple. And you know, to be honest, we kind of figured, hey, you know, here's the mechanism, we're collecting fees, here's, you know, it's very complex when you break it down. So, you know, first of all, I'd like to thank Parks and Rec and Planning and everyone for, you know, really kind of jumping in both feed forward and putting their – rolling their sleeves up and all the other, you know, terms to really get this thing done. It took a lot of work to get this draft. And like Roger said, I think, you know, what you're seeing here in the comments is just clarification. We were planning for a bunch of real-world scenarios – and, you know, getting further refined information from Carson is what you're going to see in the final draft.
So the in the late material, it says, I'm just skimming it, but it talks about a one-year warranty, but in the agreement it says developer is going to be responsible for two. Is it going to be a year or two on the warranty?
The language in the petition was pulled directly from the LMD Title 17 requirements of 24 months. In actuality, the way the city prefers to have it, it's really loose. It says 24 months from installation. If it's 24 months from installation, when you're looking at all of the improvements, each tree would have a different warranty right. time frame. So what is a little easier is a typical contractor's warranty is 1 year.
Right.
And once the improvements are accepted by Carson City, you know, there's going to be a punch list. They're going to make sure the punch list is complete and everything's up to standards. Everything's going to be good once it's accepted. And then from 1 year, the contractor will warranty all of that work and all the landscaping.
And that's our standard practice currently.
That's why I was just asking, because, I mean, sometimes if there's question about things, then you may go into a second year and say, okay, let's do an extended warranty and make it two. But I just wanted to clarify which way you were going.
Commissioner Long. So I think you were working on clarifying, but how exactly are the expenses turned over? Could you clarify that again? But is it per phase? Once that phase is upon completion is when then the taxes roll over and then the city essentially takes ownership of it? Is that correct?
City, actually, and I'm going to take a stab at this, Chris, and butt in if I run astray. The city actually takes ownership when the property is recorded. And, you know,
is that just once it gets a parcel? Like, there's nothing built on it. It's just the parcel.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's before anything's built on it.
Yeah, you've got two different timings. You have the way your code reads is once the map is recorded and the property is offered for dedication, it's Carson City's property. In this case, as it relates to the LMD, there's no improvements on there, so there's nothing to maintain, therefore there's nothing to assess.
No assessment.
Okay, so the way this works is when a lot is created, the whole thing hinges on the completion of the first phase of the LMD. Obviously, if there wasn't that caveat, the developer would be paying assessments now for improvements of nothing. So everything hinges off of the assessment, the completion date, and the acceptance date of the first LMD phase. Once that happens, the assessments start. So, yes, all of the recorded lots now, which there's already 100, will start paying assessments.
And another question was, as far as lighting and all that, is that where does the lighting come from? Is that city, or is that going to be based on the association? Is that an association dues, or how is the lighting being done?
My understanding is there's not going to be any association, a homeowners type of association in this project. Lighting will be covered in the LMD as part of the cost of the landscape maintenance district. We still have some work yet to do. Chris has got some new information just before the meeting tonight. What are NV Energy standards and what are the city standards? And so we're going to be taking a look at that here in the next week and developing a lighting plan. But basically, most of the lighting is going to be along the street lighting. We will have some lighting in the neighborhood park around key areas like the restrooms and, you know, places like that. But most of the lighting that is going to be referred to in the LMD is going to be part of the street lighting.
Other commissioners? Any public comments on this one? Okay, so again, this is not an action item, not recommended for any action. So I guess with that said, we'll move on. So thanks for coming back and presenting that to us. Okay, so item number 3C.
Before we go to 3C, there's a number of people here, and I assume they're not here to talk about 3C, and 3C is probably going to take an hour plus. So could we accommodate them?
We also have a difference in our agendas, Roger.
We have what?
His agenda says something different than mine.
I had the draft agenda, so yeah.
Are we talking about the fair or the BMX?
No. Yeah, you got the wrong agenda.
I've got it straightened out.
Okay, so what are these kind people here for?
The next item, 3C, is possible action to identify issues and or topics in Chapter 7, in Chapter 8 for the Recreation Master Plan. That's the next step.
Yeah. So what we're getting at is, do you all want to listen to that? It's going to take an hour or something.
Well, okay. Can't we change our agenda?
Yes.
Okay, no. What are they here for? Do you have an item that you're interested in, sir?
We have comments on 3C.
Okay, good. Well, you get to sit through the whole presentation.
All right.
We're trying to speed it up for you.
Yeah, we thought you were BMX people. I don't know why.
Okay, so we will move on with 3C, which is possible action to identify issues and our topics in Chapter 7, Funding and Priorities, and Chapter 8, Policies of the Parks and Recreation Master Plan for consideration and future amendments to the plan. This is both Roger and Bert.
Sean, before we get started, I didn't want to be rude, but I let them know ahead of time that I had to dismiss myself at 6:30, so if you see me get up and leave in a few minutes... I wasn't bored. I have to be at two places at once.
You mean it's not necessarily you're leaving because you're bored?
No.
I'm leaving because I have to go about 30 feet that way, actually.
All right. First off, I want to thank the commission for... working our way through this plan. We started it back in the early spring. We have reached the fall, and we are at the last two chapters of our review of the Carson City Parks and Recreation Master Plan. Yes, you are. It's like, woohoo, it's like we've reached the end. Anyway, the two chapters we're going to be covering tonight are Chapter 7, which is the Funding and Priorities chapter, and then Chapter 8 is the Policies chapter. Both of these are actually relatively short, so that's why we've combined those into two chapters. Typically, we have just done one chapter, or in some cases, we've even broken one chapter into two parts. But in this case, we're really going to go for broke, and we're going to go after two chapters this evening. So having said all that, let's just get started. The funding sources that the master plan identifies is residential construction tax, which we've talked a lot about in relationship to the Schultz Ranch subdivision, Question 18 funding that this committee is very interested, is very knowledgeable of, and at that time when we developed the master plan, there was some discussion about possibly a new ballot issue, if you will, Question 19, for lack of a better term. In other words, of looking at additional funding. Similar to what was done through the Quality of Life Initiative. Let's just kind of quickly, for everybody's review, just kind of go over some things just related to the funding sources that you are familiar with, so I'll move through this quickly. Residential construction tax, it's used for neighborhood parks that are funded through the general fund, developer contributions, and, of course, the residential construction tax. Approximately $1,000 is collected per new residences. But typically what we have found, specifically before the Great Recession, is that you were looking at probably twice that per resident cost to create a new neighborhood park. So that was one of the things when you talk about funding. We were, even at that point, when we did this plan back in 2006, we were, the impact fee, if you will, for residential construction tax really didn't cover the cost that was necessary. Rebates of the residential construction tax can be earned by developers who construct new park facilities and new developments, similar to what we heard about with Schultz Ranch. There is no funding mechanism that increases the maintenance budgets when new parks are built, and that was true up until this LMD district. What historically has happened is the city has been very successful in ensuring developers dedicate land as well as pay for the whole cost of developing the parks. This is as long as the voluntary development agreement are successful in ensuring both land dedication and development to parks, no other funding will be required. Because of the tenuous nature of these voluntary agreements, it's recommended that the voluntary practice be formalized in development standards, and that's kind of the process that we're working through this evening in some relationship.
In fact, if I could add to that, now a lot of that is, well, it's not formalized into development standards. It is included in the development agreement with developers that they will build the parks, it will be, and you know, the improvements, and they will fund it and pay for that. So it's not included in city standards, but it is included in the negotiated development agreement that the city enters into with the developer.
Question 18 funding, again, most of you are very familiar with this, but for those who might be watching at home, the voters approved the Quality of Life Initiative in 1996. The shorthand for that is Question 18. It was a quarter cent sales tax increase. 40% of it was used for acquiring and maintaining open space, 40% for the development of community park facilities and trails, and 20%, the remaining 20% was to maintain and operate park facilities that were developed as a part of the Question 18 initiative to help deal with that shortfall of when you build a facility, it just is a way to help fund the maintenance that and the less of an impact on the general fund that way. Some of the projects that have been completed over the years, we have the aquatic facility. In the aquatic facility, of course, we have the 50-meter pool, we have the therapy pool, there, and of course, there is the outdoor pool. A lot of bikes and a lot of multi-purpose facilities, trails that we've been able to construct with that. Carson River, new trails, picnic areas, trailheads. Also, there's a street tree beautification program that was funded for a long while through Question 18. And, of course, new facilities at the youth sports complexes we have in town. For example, the North Fields at maybe Livermore Sports Complex was actually developed using Question 18 monies. The Boys and Girls Club gets some annual support for maintenance out of the Question 18 funds. Fuji Park, a lot of the renovations, especially the park itself, was completely redone. For those of you who maybe were here before 2000, the year 2000, there was a significant renovation that happened, and it was using Question 18 funds to renovate the entire park on the west side of the exhibit hall. The Rifle and Pistol Range, a lot of improvements were made there. And, of course, Mills Park, the east end of the Mills Park was also used for landscaping irrigation system and the sidewalk system for some of the improvements to the east end of Mills Park. We've done that. There have been some improvements made to the Bob Boltrick Theater using Question 18 monies. And, of course, we have some additional sports fields at the John D. Winter Centennial Park. And I wouldn't say additional sports fields at this point. I would just say more improvements to the existing sports fields that we have up there, specifically the upper complex. And, of course, which is on everyone's mind, is the new MAC that's coming. And a good share of those funds for the MAC have come through Question 18 funding. This was kind of interesting at the time when we went through this process of the master plan. Was the new ballot initiative. At that time, again, remember, we had a lot of money rolling in. The economy was really good. So there was some discussion in the master plan about the possibility of a new ballot issue. And basically, this comes right out of the master plan. Question 18 anticipates using a funding stream in an ongoing manner once the original list was completed. The reality is that cost increases have reduced the purchasing power. Projects have been scaled back, and bonding will be required to assemble funds for currently planned projects, including the match, which combine other projects, will consume the availability of funds for at least the next 15 years. And Roger, that's pretty close to being accurate. Do you want to follow up on that a little bit?
Well, I guess the only thing to add to it, and maybe just stating what you said in a different way, it's amazing that back in 2006 when we went through this master plan process, even at that time, working with our consultant, he could foresee that that really the money derived in quality of life wasn't going to be sufficient to provide all the facilities that we had hoped that it would. But the nice thing about Question 18 and the quality of life is that it doesn't sunset, so it's going to continue to generate sales tax revenue. So after projects become completed, we may be in the opportunity to look at either funding on our basic annual appropriation from the 1/4 cent sales tax, or maybe we will be in a position to do a future bond for future projects and needs. And then, of course, we know that the 1/8 cent sales tax, which was enacted by the board, is also helping to fund the MAC as well as several other projects. Not park and recreation projects, but several other community projects.
Fern? I just wanted to make a quick comment.
Sure.
That you'll note in your list of projects that there is the rifle and pistol range, and hopefully in that fund somewhere, Question 18, there's $1,200 for porta potties.
Well, we probably wouldn't use capital funds for that. We'd probably use some type of contractual or probably funds out of the general fund, but. Or possibly out of the 20%. That's what we'll look into, yes. And And there were quite a few improvements made to the shooting range through quality of life funds.
Some of the other things that were identified in the master plan, thinking ahead a little bit, extensive improvements to the trail system. We are still in the process of trying to do a lot of those missing links. Certainly money could be used for that. We still, even though the master plan identified a number of neighborhoods that were underserved, trying to provide neighborhood parks was something we really not really had the opportunity or funding to tackle. Also, future growth of the sports complexes. The Lower Centennial Sports Complex is one of those that really needs to be expanded and looked at. And a development of a community park. Staff has talked to the commission before about, we're just in some ways loving Mills Park to death. So so another community park is something certainly that other funds could be used for as we talk about the different needs within the community. This is another section within the master plan. It's called Establishing General Priorities. And so we'll just kind of talk a little bit about how that was done. There is a Tier 1 and a Tier 2 process, or a Tier 1 level and a Tier 2. Tier 1, as defined by the master plan, is the highest priority actions based on the highest level of service needs related to growth and strong preferences, as noted in the public opinion survey. And then Tier 2 is tasks slightly less urgent than Tier 1, less resources intensive, and can be worked out at the same time as the other, or can be worked on at the same time as the Tier 1 actions. The master plan identified these as the highest priority. Trails, that was definitely something through the public opinion survey that was ranked very high. We have tried to use question 18 monies and leverage that against a number of different grants to address that issue. The arts touch more households. That was one of those aha moments that we talked about in the master plan, that arts is a very significant part of what this community likes and sees a need for. There have been improvements made to the Bob Boldrick Theater, and that's been a good thing to have happen. Of course, the recreation center, our gym, to take pressure off the community center and provide other opportunities for different indoor sports programs and other types of needs that we might have. Other priorities, a community park. That was one of the other things that talked about through the master plan process of trying to find some land that will allow greater predictability in planning future recreational facilities. Establishing additional long-term funding, question 18, is a model for future improvements. So we wanted to possibly take another look at that and, of course, complete the question 18 projects that are consistent with the Tier 1 priorities, and we're getting close to doing that now. The other thing we wanted to talk about is trying to capture some key neighborhood parks. A few vacant parcels in underserved neighborhoods would be something that could really use some additional funding to allow us to address that particular need identified in the master plan. Some Tier 2 priorities is the annual prioritization, 1 and 5 year improvements programs. We do that on a fairly regular basis with the commission through the capital improvement projects process. The city has talked about additional sports fields, expand sports tournaments, update the plan for Mills Park. Staff's been talking about that related to Mills Park, possibly a redo of the master plan for Mills Park. Look at revised dedication requirements to ensure parks and trails are provided in new development and redevelopment, and then work with the school district to make improvements and to maintain specific schools and their parks. Other things that we've talked about in the Tier 2 or the master plan does, look at conducting studies to document maintenance efficiencies and improve irrigation systems. Scott and I have, I still remember when I first walked in this door, Scott had 3 or 4 different irrigation systems at several parks that he wanted to redesign or to design and take out the existing irrigation system, and just because of money, that's never happened. So we have a number of parks that when I got here were galvanized systems and were old, and 18 years later, they still have not been, the infrastructure is still there. And what happens is that, yes, they can keep them up and running, but it takes a lot of staff time to go out there and repair mainline breaks and to replace heads and to do those things to actually keep an irrigation system up and running that drains money not only, or drains time from Scott's guys, but it also drains money from his operational budget with all the different parts and repairs that have to happen versus just saying it's just past its prime and it's past its time, and just put in a new system. So there are a number of parks out there that are in that kind of condition, especially some of the older parks on the west side of town in particular have that particular problem. Want to look at monitor growth and update projections and project facility programs in need. I believe Megan does a good job with that. Create policies and procedures for expanded dog use in parks. We've done that. We actually have, it says, consider community support for establishing a dog park as one of our two-tier priorities, and that's been accomplished. And we also have a dog-friendly policy that Scott has spent a lot of time working on in parks. Complete an ordinance addressing funding for new neighborhood park maintenance. Oops, wrong one. Wrong button.
And of course, some of that, part of that has been completed with the landscape maintenance district ordinance that we discussed today.
One of the things that the consultant team felt was important to do is when the commission started looking at different priorities, he actually came up with a list of questions. And, you know, we might be able to use these as if we move ahead with some other prioritizations with Question 18 funding. Will this action address a pressing recreation need? Will not taking this action result in the loss of a unique opportunity? Do we have the resources to maintain and manage this action over a long term? Does taking this action set a precedent not consistent with existing policies? Will this action result in high cost-benefit ratio? Can this action be taken, provided by another organization? Does this action offer partnership opportunities for sharing development and or operating costs? Okay, so that takes chair. We just kind of quickly ran through Chapter 7. Are there any questions or thoughts that someone might have on that before we move on to 8?
Like Roger mentioned, I think that's where we're at in our culture. Branch thing. I think that everything that goes through Public Works, if I understand it correctly, what we're doing right now is you as the planner are going to make sure we have the right landscaping materials and that. Scott gets to make sure we have the right sprinklers and the right pipes and the right facilities that he can maintain. And, you know, so I think we seem to be pretty much on track with that as far as our city policies and our Parks and Rec policies.
All right, moving on to Chapter 8.
No, it's okay. So question 18 was kind of documented in the policy. Is it worth considering now the 8 cent increase, at least including that at some point in here, to recognize that that was needed for a portion of the MAC? What is it? It's going to be roughly, is it a third of the total revenue?
Yeah, it'll be approximately about $2.3 million. You know, and that's actually a pretty good comment that, as you remember, at the end of the last meeting we had in October on this issue, the discussion with staff and the commission was that instead of maybe making an amendment to the master plan, but to put together a report, a summary report that could be forward on to the Board of Supervisors, and that would be a good issue to add into that summer report.
Okay, I think we had a comment on the last one that were similar. We're going to add. Could we please add that one?
Pardon me.
Could you include this item to add to the report?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Certainly can.
Okay.
Excuse me. Also, the landscape maintenance district is a fact. So, to update this, add that to your report.
Good comments. Moving on, some of the things we're going to talk about related to policies in Chapter 8 are going to be amendments to the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, park standards, partnerships, economic development, cost recovery, and ADA compliance. So these are some policies that have been identified in the Master Plan that we try to do better, that the goal is to be able to implement these different policies through these 6 things. Amendments to the master plan, we've talked about this before. The idea would be is that it is a living document. One of the things that we thought at the time was a great thing was to look at and change and update this regularly and annually. We've kind of come through our discussions that maybe that was overly ambitious for what we're doing. But I think still the ultimate goal is to review it and update it regularly, and that's what we're at least to review it, and that's what we're trying to do through this process that we've been working on this past year. The city will not make land use decisions in conflict with the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. It's something that our department keeps a constant eye on, and so does the planning department. When we get parcel and when we get projects in for parcel maps or other types of projects, we do refer back to the master plan to compare those with what we're trying to do. Park standards. We try to work with the idea of developing a park, a service level. That's similar to what we tried to do down with Schultz Ranch. We tried to look at how many homes were going to be in there. And this commission helped with that. We were originally proposing, or was originally being proposed, with a 3-acre park. It got moved to a 5-acre park. We got detention basins. So trying to develop that level of service for those homes is something very important that we need to keep working on and trying to be consistent with that. New development, which again, Schultz Ranch was here. We want to have our neighborhood parks, which have natural characteristics and basic amenities. And for existing neighborhoods where recreation equality is not possible, to seek equality with recreational amenities. Equity, excuse me, I'm sorry. Partnerships. The city will place a high priority on partnering with to provide programs, share facilities with the school district and college where possible, and to accommodate other city facilities. And especially in these tight economic times, that is more important than ever. Economic development, the city supports cost-effective expansion of programs that provide a positive contribution to the city's economy and enhance recreation opportunities. Cost recovery, this is something we've chatted about before related to our recreational facilities. Fees are set on a facility-by-facility basis by the Board of Supervisors with recommendations from the Parks and Recreation Commission. Our programs, our recreation programs, and our sports and all of our programs are targeted at 100% cost recovery. And again, that's something that's set up by the Parks and Recreation Department with the board. And of course, program user fees takes into account the ability to pay and the cost of nearby programs so that we're competitive within the market. ADA compliance, that's something that we strive for. Not only is it a federal requirement, but it is something that we're committed to across the board for both individuals with disabilities, not only for our recreation programs and our pool and our aquatic facility, but in our parks as well. That's very important to us to be able to move forward and provide accessibility for all folks who might have some maybe mobility challenged. Funding implementation strategies. That was also discussed within the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. Want to create local requirements to ensure that park dedications reflect the actual cost of providing finished neighborhood parks. Want to provide a means of funding additional maintenance required for new neighborhood parks. You see this process actually in work right now with the LMD. And then possibly adopt an ordinance to permit a formation of a parks maintenance district, which again you're seeing again as this process with the Schultz Ranch. So a lot of these funding implementation strategies are being worked at. This was one that came up at the time at 2006. Work with other communities and statewide organizations such as the Nevada Recreation Park Society to approach the state legislature to adjust the RTC. There was some discussion at that point. Roger, I know you had spent some time talking about that, but as the economy started to slow down, that there was just at that time the thought was that let sleeping dogs lie and we'll just kind of work with our $1,000 residential construction tax. Part of the concern was is that maybe that would open a can of worms that we would regret. But anyway, it was on there. It was something that again, it was trying to address an implementation strategy. It was trying to address the need for additional funds to make up the difference of what was costing us to build the park versus the money we were getting. Establish, utilize a nonprofit organization to generate funds for endowments to help bridge the gap between parks, recreation, and open space and needs. Pursue additional funding through initiative comparable to the Quality of Life Initiative. Utilize state bonds for funding for parks open space projects. There has been a statewide effort to provide funding for recreation, open space, and trail development. This effort is expected to continue. What that, I believe, was referring to was the Question 1 initiative by the state during, again, these hard economic times. They just didn't have not. That was a funding source that we relied heavily on for our trails particularly, and also for some of our improvements down along the river. That fund, because of the recession and the state's ability to bond, went dry and has not come back yet. But we're hopeful. Hopefully they will be able to do that. So anyway, that takes us quickly through chapters 7 and 8, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you might have on 8.
So before we do any more commissioner comments, I know there were a few public comments, so any public comments on this item? Come on up at this time.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Mr. John Beer, spelled like the liquid that some people drink at Friday at 5. I moved here to the Carson City area 4.5 years ago. I moved from the land of the granola bar. How many people know where that is? No. You take the fruits and nuts out of California, and all you have left is flakes. And I moved here because of the high quality of life, the low taxes, the great weather, the great people, availability of ski resorts close by, and a lot of other reasons. I love this area. I love Carson. And I am a member of the Carson Rifle and Pistol Club. Previously, I was on the United States Air Force pistol team, and I have shot competitively in Oklahoma, Texas, California, Arizona, New Mexico, many other states, and every place that I've gone to their city and parks, recreation, and rifle and pistol ranges have restrooms for men and women. When I came into this room tonight, I counted 7 women in the room. I think 2 have left. Now, I would like to have the women in this room raise their hand and say if they came to this meeting tonight that goes from 5:30 to 8 o'clock and there were no restrooms available, would you still come to the meeting? Would you raise your hand? Okay. You got a good bladder. So 2 of the 5 remaining would have come to the meeting, and the other 3 would have said, hey, there's no restrooms there. Now, one of the first matches that I went to at the Carson Rifle and Pistol Range, I was introduced to this club, and then I've gone to subsequent matches, and people from Winnemucca, from Lovelock, and Elko reserve the range bays to have their club put on various type of shooting competitive matches. And I've seen those people come here, 60, 70, 80 shooters at one time come to the Carson Rifle and Pistol Range to compete competitively. I've done this for 4 years, and every year the number of female shooters reduces down to now maybe 1 or maybe 2 that have good bladders like Donna, because there's no facilities for those ladies. Now, I've been told by my club members, and the past president sitting behind me can add comments to this, that our club donated to the Carson Parks and Recreation Committee, these people, we donated a year and a half ago $20,000. Now, your name, sir?
Vern
just read from the script that I got off the internet. I've read it. And it says here that you have, in 1996, this was on your screen, Carson approved quality of life initiative that provided, and he went through the various 40% for this, 40% for that, 20% for that, a 1% tax for the improvement of the parks facilities in the Carson area. I've been to many of your parks facilities, and there's not one that I've been to, except the Carson Rifle and Pistol Range, that does not have restrooms. Now, when these people from Lovelock and Elko and other communities reserve the bays and come and bring all these people, they have an hour to an hour and a half break, and they all fan out and go to lunch, to Burger King, to Wendy's. Some of them might bring their own brown bags, and some of them go to the radio-controlled air park facility, which is less than a mile from the range, that has restrooms provided by Parks and Recreation. Now, when these people go out and spend all their money on lunches, and some of them stay overnight because it's a long drive back to the east, they put their money in their hotels and motels in this community. They increase the tax basis for the city of Carson. And yet, we gave $20,000 to Parks and Recreation. You're going to have to tell me where that money went. But it didn't go for a porta potty. Donna was so gracious to bring to the attention of the board here that you had a request for a porta potty. We've done our homework. We know that to have a single porta potty on a trailer brought out there, and we'd be willing to tow it out there and pick it up at the county facilities, is about $1,000 a year. The $20,000 we gave to Parks and Recreation would supply a porta potty for 20 years. And yet we've been told there's no funding. Yet Vern did a great job of explaining your facilities on Exhibit A, all these things that have been done, that are planned, that are hoping, and yet if we had a porta potty available or restrooms available out at the range, you'd have a lot more shooters, a lot more female shooters, and increase the tax revenue to the city.
Okay, I'm going to have to interject because there's a time limit on public comments. And we're getting a little off topic here. We're going over Chapter 7 and 8 of the master plan.
And the master plan says, right on, I'm reading from it, rifle and pistol range improvements and improved areas, and above that, Fuji Park, renovations, group picnic areas, restrooms, and parking.
So let me just, we understand there's a need for a restroom there.
Thank you.
There's a couple things. There's plenty of other facilities that don't have restrooms. I've got a facility that I'd like to see a restroom at, and there is not one there. So there are plenty of other facilities that don't have them. Scott, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I'd just like to respond for the record. Again, Scott Fehrenbrick, Deputy Director. I was the one that came to the Rifle and Pistol Club about a year ago and obtained the money, and I've made it very clear to the Rifle and Pistol Club that the money was for the BMX lights. I also made it very clear to the Rifle and Pistol Club that we were going to work with the Rifle and Pistol Club to try and obtain some type of permanent restroom structure there, which I think we've fulfilled to this point. Unfortunately, Ken Chambers is not here because Ken Chambers is the liaison with the Rifle and Pistol Club that I deal with and I keep informed. Roger and I, a month ago, went to the Winnemucca shooting range with NDAO officials, Nevada Division of Wildlife officials, to look at the shooting range there, to look at the classroom facility, to look at the restrooms. I've kept Ken Chambers with the Rifle and Pistol Club informed of that. And I also explained to the Rifle and Pistol Club a year ago when I went to your board meeting what the problem is with the portable toilets. The problem is every time we take one out there, it gets shot up. And you can talk to the sheriff, you can talk to the deputies in town. There's a lot of characters out there at night, and people are out there shooting holes in our roof. They've shot some of our vertical support posts in those shelters so much that we've had to replace them. And every time that we put one out there, they shoot it up. Now, about a month ago, somebody from the Rifle and Pistol Club sent me an email about the feasibility of putting portable toilets on a trailer. And I responded, and I hooked them up with Rob McFadden, who is the owner of Nevada Johns. I don't know which gentleman, maybe one of you here was involved in that. But those emails kept going back and forth. I hooked him up with Rob McFadden. Rob was quoting them prices, and that's the last I heard of it. But I can say that we are working towards permanent restrooms. We are trying to fulfill our commitment that I made to you folks a year ago, but it's not a simple solution. The solution is not to go out there and just plop a portable toilet down. You need to have some type of mechanism to where you can take it out there, bring it back at the end of the weekend, and to have one out there 7 days a week right now just isn't going to happen until we build permanent facilities and we can are able to provide some security out there. And the other thing that we're working on is an electric gate that would open at dawn and close at dusk, because we have no control out there. Once dusk hits every day, vandalism occurs. You can go out there right now, and I can guarantee you there's people out there right now, and they're up to no good.
You make a very good point, and I can assure you that the club is comprised of mature, responsible individuals, and we would accept the responsibility of picking up and taking out that porta potty on a trailer and storing it in a location that was safe and secure and it wouldn't get shot up. We will take it to and take it from for matches and make sure it's not out there overnight and get shot up. You're 100% correct. There are a lot of yahoos out there that don't have the maturity, and we've even considered calling the sheriff on them a couple of times. So you've made every point very, very valid. Our solution is we will bring it to and from the facility and assure that it doesn't get shot up. We just want the Parks and Recreation Department to supply it so that our shooters, especially our female shooters, increase and have an opportunity to use the facility. And thank you very much for your comments, Scott.
May I, John? First of all, I resent just a tad. You know, there's also older shooters, and, you know, they may need to use restrooms, male or female, more often. I mean, it's not just because you're a female you have to go running to the restroom all the time.
No, I understand. Anyway, we understand that. But they don't like to go out and squat
process,
in the sagebrush.
Yes. Our process is generally like we have one going on for the disc golf. And they came to us and said, you know, we need disc golf. We don't have no disc golf in Carson City. And we need to have it. And we talked to them about, well, you need to get your group together. You need to see if there's any way that you can organize into a nonprofit, maybe, and get some funding of your own. But meet with staff, come up with some ideas. They've been out looking at properties, and you could do the same with staff. And then when the time comes, and there's going to be two times coming up in January, I see on our proposed agenda, we have prioritization of projects for quality of life. And then at another time, we're going to be looking at, well, we haven't set a date yet, but possible action to approve Parks and Recreation capital projects request for the 2015-16 budget. And so that's the time where we can see where we can fit in. If there's enough information, if Scott's satisfied with the solution everybody's come up with, and there's enough information there, we can see if that'll fit in.
Thank you,
Don. Okay.
Thank you, Don. And Scott, would you be willing to come to another one of our meetings and we can set up a committee to help you come to a reasonable solution so everybody's happy?
As long as you guys aren't packing when I show up, I'll show up. No, and you know, when you were speaking, you know, during public comment, the gentleman on the end there, I slipped in my card because I want to meet with you folks to see if we can resolve it. We need to get back on track here with this agenda item, but yeah, let's meet, and I'll get Rob McFadden with Nevada Johnson. Let's get together and meet over at the Parks office, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, and we'll get Ken Chambers to come. Thank you very much, Scott. Great. Thank you, Donna.
Sure.
Okay, so, yeah, getting back to the issue at hand here, we're talking about the master plan, Chapter 7 and 8. Is there any commission comments on the agenda item, Chapter 7 and 8 of the master plan? Commissioner Colburn.
So, I don't know which one it was, right? It was around, like, the economic development piece, right? I don't know if that's policies, Chapter 8 or not.
Oh, we've lost it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think there would be an emotional outcry if I lost this, but obviously
yeah,
there was.
Like a little bit, right? Like, I almost lost my thought entirely, so.
Okay, let me see if I can find it again for you.
So I think it was in strategy. No, it's fine. Like, but
economic development, is that what you're talking about?
Right. So, okay. Like, relative to policies, like as a macro statement, I think that we do, like, a really good job, like, following these kind of tenants, and I don't see, like, a necessary, like, change to any of them. But I think that from, like, an economic development perspective, we're really good at some of our facilities, and, like, as we bring projects, we really understand the economic impact, and others, I think, that we hit and hope with. And so to the extent that, like, it's more standardized, I think that, because, I mean, if you use like, pure economic development and ROI, I think that, I mean, for crying out loud, at Centennial Park, we'd probably have valet parking. If we invested based on, like, how it ROIs every time we put a dollar into that place, we make, like, it's a gross amount relative to, like, what comes back to the city, and there's other places that we don't. And to, like, consistently have that message relative to projects, I think, is important.
You know, that's a really good point. And I guess the other point maybe I'm going to add to that, and maybe you kind of inferred it, but we've done a pretty good job, a really good job, I think, in most cases, identifying what the economic impact of having tournaments and special events and that in this community is. What we really haven't done a very good job is convincing that some of that economic development needs to go back to those facilities. And I think that's what you're referring to when you talk about valet parking. I mean,
right. I think that like it's twofold, right? Because that drives the next piece relative to where do you come up with some of this funding, right? Because you have a laundry list if you look at capital projects of like just like maintenance that we can't get done. And so to the extent that you drive economic development with, like, new capital projects and then figure out a way to fund via economic development, I think, like, some of these conversations become a lot easier. Like, $1,200 for a restroom? Like, go away. Like, we get it, right? Like, we have $1,200.
So I don't want to go too far off topic, but I don't think the problem really is coming up with $1,200 for a restroom, right? If really what we just needed is a restroom that could be used, I think that could be done. Is that right?
You know, let's be careful.
Essentially, is vandalization like sometimes more of the problem than it is to be able to come up with?
Let's be careful. We don't get too far off topic because it's not restrooms up there is not an agendized item.
Okay, I guess where I'm and I don't. The restroom is the example, but I think this is kind of pertinent to. The 40-40-20, and we've talked about this before, about the more things we have, the more money we need to maintain them. And I guess it's appalling to me to think that we're looking at relatively large projects, but we can't come up with some of the simple. Like, we have a list of 6-8 parks just off the top of our head that don't have a restroom. I'd sure like to think from a maintenance perspective that anything that we've put enough time into in order to create a park that we could at least have a bathroom. And so I guess one thing would be, that's something maybe a future agenda would be, let's come up with a list of all these and prioritize that as well. But I see those as like low-hanging fruit that we should bang out and be done with.
I agree with you, but don't forget, too, that we also have people who don't want restrooms in the parks in their neighborhood, too. You know, we ran into those situations as well, so.
But if I may say, our master plan, Section 6.2.2, requires that they be there. So I'm very famously in love with that section of the master plan.
Okay, well this item is a possible action item. Does anyone actually want to make a stab at a motion, or are we just going to let it be how it is?
I'll make a motion to not change, to not recommend any kind of change to the actual master plan, but given, I think you've taken a couple of notes of the things that we'll summarize in the future.
Yeah, I don't even think we need to second that if we're not going to take any action. Is there any other comments on this? Any other further public comments on this item? We didn't.
Do we need to second it?
The motion was to not do anything. To do just take into account our comments.
It wouldn't hurt to put that in a motion. I mean, I think you probably all agree with it that you may want to make that a motion and get a second and take action on it.
Then I'll second it.
Fern, do you have anything to say?
All I was going to say is maybe part of the discussion is that we have set up now going toward a report versus amending the master plan. And What we'll do is, depending on the agenda item and my time, my goal is to try to be here in December with a draft report for you guys to look at. Depending on the amount of agenda items we have, that may get bumped to July. We've got the MAC coming in. We've got the LND coming back in
January.
December. January? Yeah, so I'll be back in January. Okay. So I'd be either, what did I say? Did I say July? No, yes, thank you. Thank you for that correction. No. One, you know, we've had a good run, and it's time to wrap this up. And I think, you know, preferably December, but it may roll into January depending on it. But we'll come back with a draft report. You'll all get a chance to look at it. If I've missed something, you know, we can add it. It's going to be kind of a work in progress kind of thing. So when it does come back, think of it as a work in progress. And, you know, I'm going to do my best with Roger and Scott to identify the issues that we've talked about of reporting to the board. But we'll bring it back, and if you want to add something, and we can talk about it, see.
Okay, so we have a motion that has been seconded that we're going to keep these two chapters the same but incorporate the comments that we've gone over tonight. All in favor of that, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, great. We can go on to item number four, which is staff updates. 4A is an update on the multipurpose athletic center project. Now, yeah, I did notice on the draft agenda, that was a possible action item. So I guess we were close because that was about 4 or 5 days ago, I think.
We were close, and we pulled it off as an action item because the 100% documents aren't ready yet, and so we put it on as an update. And so in the back of your, right near the back of your agenda, you'll see there's an item that has a title, Agenda Item 4A. And this is a email report from James Morris, who is, you've met James, Jim. He came here and gave you the last update on the MAC, the 90% update. He's the guy that's in charge of the project for the city. Is employed by the Public Works Department. And I'm going to kind of paraphrase a little bit, but what he says in his email is that he anticipates the GMP, and if you remember, that's the guaranteed maximum price that the CMAR consultant, who is Miles Construction, will give that to the city by mid-November, so it's coming up here soon. At that point, they can finalize negotiations that take the 100% documents and the GMP to the Parks and Recreation Commission meeting for their approval, and that'll be at the December 2nd meeting. And with that approval, if it's approved, it'll be brought to the Board of Supervisors on the December 18th meeting for action. So that's just a little update where we're at. You might note, if you have that in front of you, that the Board of Supervisors, as mentioned, would like to have a grand opening of the MAC on December 2015. So they're trying to fast-track this project, which is good to hear. It's a high priority for the Board of Supervisors and city staff as well.
So with the 100% documents coming next week, which would be this week, I guess there's really no room for discussion anymore on what the facility is. We're at 100%.
Yeah, you know, really, you're not going to see any significant changes to the design of the project. You know, right now it's just looking at the, you know, fine-tuning, some of the civil engineering is still out there, some of the landscaping plans that need to be addressed. So that'll all be brought at the December 2nd meeting.
So obviously this is the MAC with the walking track that we've talked
about
over and over.
That's correct.
Now, if there's a minor addition that we think would be helpful, like banking the turns on the walking track, that's something that can be done later.
It's something that can be discussed. I can tell you that it's probably not going to be within the budget. We're looking at a very tight budget. And I don't think that the banked curves on the walking track is something that I would recommend. I know where those have been used in the past. They really only really service a small minority of the users, and those are the ones who run competitively. The average walkers hate the bank curves. They find them uncomfortable, and they don't like to use them. And I think really when you look at the clientele that's going to be using that facility, you're probably talking more walkers, more recreational type people than you are competitive runners.
All right, Darna.
It's a tough
tenth of a mile, Sean.
We can have competitive meets in there, for heaven's sake.
Like a 60-lapper.
They have indoor marathons now. That's the new craze.
Oh, God.
It's like 400 laps or something like that.
I have a comment.
Okay, Commissioner Curtis.
Yes, has there been any discussion on naming this, or are we going to, what's it called?
We just have a working title, and that's the Carson City Multi-Purpose Athletic Center. So there has not been a formal name attached to the facility at this time.
Okay, is there any public comments on this item? Any more commissioner comments? Okay, so it sounds like we are on the fast track. That'll be nice to see next time. Item number 4B is an update regarding possible disc golf course locations. Roger.
I know this is an item that the commission is interested in, so I did want to kind of bring back another update on this on the disc golf course and where we are on this project. As you know, there was a site selected. We call it various names, Flint Road site, the Flint Ridge site, the landfill site, you know. I mean, and I think we don't like the name landfill site. I can see heads shaking there. And that's kind of the preferred and selected site. However, you know, as I mentioned before, we are starting to get some concerns about that site in terms of what we see down the road are some additional regulations by the Nevada Department of Environment. They have the regulatory authority over the landfill, and they're already talking about some authority issues, mandated changes in the landfill, and we're starting to get the feeling that, you know, maybe there's going to be more of those in the future, and then coupled with the fact that some of that area is going to be used maybe as a disposal site for some of the soil in the construction of the I-580, the south end of it, or the south leg of it, we're wondering if maybe that's still the best location. I mean, we're ready to move forward on it. You know, we do know that that's BLM property. It's coming to us with the BLM land transfer as part of the lands bill. But we have discussed a few other sites, and to that end, we invited Greg Swift. He's in the audience here because he's one of the longtime advocates of disc golf course in the area, and we took him around and showed him the three sites we're looking at. We are looking at those sites possibly as alternatives to the current site. What we would like to do is maybe engage some of the other disc golf advocates and have them look at it before we really bring these sites forward to you. One obvious reason is that some of these sites, whenever we start talking about recreational facilities within the city, sometimes you get the concerns of the neighborhoods that are immediately adjacent to those areas. So we don't want to unduly alarm neighborhoods at this point, unless we really think that these sites are going to be sites that we want to bring forward to the Park and Recreation Commission for your consideration. And we hope to do that here in the next sometime this month, and we'd like to have that kind of wrapped up. And I'm kind of looking over at Greg because seeing if he's going to nod in affirmative, he wants to be involved in that part of the assessment. And he got a real small nod over there, I think. But so anyhow, we hope to have this kind of wrapped up in, you know, early in 2016, that we will bring this back to you with some definitive recommendations as to site, and it may be staying with the site that's already selected.
Early 2015.
Oh, 2015. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You and Vern are way ahead of
yourself.
You're
into July, and I'm a year ahead. Yeah.
Mr. Swift, do you have any comments on this?
Hi, Greg Swift. Been here before. So the main thing, I think, is we're waiting patiently. But part of the problem is that the land has not been turned over. So we're just hoping we don't get lost in the shuffle. We're seeing a lot of other communities progressing with their disc golf courses that have come online well after we started the process. And I know most of that is due to circumstances that can't be controlled. But I do like that they're looking at some additional sites, or maybe, you know, can alter that one site slightly.
So then the ultimate question is what is your preferred secondary site, if there was a secondary site?
Oh, well, I think, you know, once they propose them, we can make a choice. But, I don't know if all of them have even been thrown out there. So,
if I could interject, would it be safe to say they have potential, though, to be
sites?
So.
Yeah, the ones that I've seen, you know, that they've mentioned that are possibilities, there's a couple of them that are really definitely good sites. I think the disc golf community's just ready to progress. Again, it's a low cost to get them up and going. So I'm hoping if that land gets transferred or shortly if they propose a couple other sites that we just don't get lost in the shuffle. It seems like we have the support of the community and the commission. So I talked to various individuals today that were going to come, but it was just for comment. So they'll wait until it progresses. But we're hoping that we can be put on the agenda just so we can get it up and running by next spring, which I guess.
Why don't we make a commitment that that we will, at the latest, have this in front of the commission for the January meeting?
January?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 2015.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. Commissioner Long?
Greg, first of all, thanks for being patient. I know for me, I'm not going to forget about it because I'm just going on my, coming up, starting my third year, and the least I can do is try to help push a $10,000 disc golf course or something, whatever it costs, but push it through. So thank you for your persistence. And so I obviously we'll let you guys know down maybe potential sites, and we'll be back to talk about them. But based on what you know and what you've seen, is the dump site still your primary? Is that still your favorite?
I don't know if it's formally proposed, but there is an adjustment to that site, moving it just to the west, that I think would be highly desirable.
Okay. I just want to
Stay maybe out of the way of some of the other concerns. So
sure.
I guess
just because the BLM has taken so long. I mean, I know it was over a year ago. We thought maybe it might be turned over. So I'm to the point with that one. If you have others that are highly favorable, I'd be a proponent of just moving on and forgetting about BLM, because who knows what's happening.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, if we have any updates as far as that goes. It sounds like it's getting close, but it always does. So.
Yeah, I think we are getting close. Unfortunately, I hesitate to mention this. Two of the three sites we looked at are BLM property. Now, one of them is coming, again, will be coming to us as part of the lands transfer. The other one would be BLM property that we would look at trying to get into a recreation and public purpose arrangement agreement with them, which would probably be would be quicker than waiting for the other properties to be deeded over to us.
Okay.
Would probably be a quicker route.
Can you at least give an estimate of your definition of what when you say close? Like what?
Well, you know, you've heard me say this before, you know, that we're constantly being told that we're 3 months away. And we've been told that for 4 years now, but there are some signs that we understand that BLM has completed some of the tasks that they need to do to make this transfer, and some of those tasks have been completed. So that's a good sign.
Okay.
So yeah. The one potential site that doesn't have the BLM encumbrance would be the community college site, the college site.
You're really working me. You're trying to get these out, aren't you? That one could be considered again, too. I mean, you know, that one was kind of rated fairly low compared to some of the others. But you know.
So out of the three that you're talking about, where's the site that doesn't have the BLM?
it's within the corporate limits of Carson City.
Well, just one last comment is because a lot of the businesses or individuals that said, you know, they would like to help out by either purchasing a basket or sponsoring a basket. You know, I've gone back to a couple of them, and, you know, it's been so long that we're almost starting over again. So just hoping we can keep the ball moving. And I've been in touch with Roger and Vern, so they've been, you know, trying to make it happen too. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks again for coming, and looks like we have a commitment to get somewhere by January. Any other commissioner comments on this one? Any other public comments? Okay, so in January we will revisit this. We'll go on to item number 4C, an update regarding the John D. Winter Centennial Park Upper Sports Complex ADA Improvements Project. Vern.
Yeah, just a quick update for the commission. A couple weeks back, the city opened bids for the ADA improvements up at Centennial. And the low bid was $115,480.50. The Board of Supervisors tomorrow, if all goes well, will award VNC Construction Incorporated the project. Purchasing and Contracts has identified them as the lowest responsive and responsible bidder. So we are looking forward to doing that, providing some definitely needed improvements up at the Upper Sports Complex to address our lack of ADA facilities up there. So we're really excited about this. As the Commission may recall, we received a Land and Water Conservation Fund grant for $75,000. Where did that money come from? And then we have to match it. I'm a challenge tonight. No, a little over $75,000 of land and water conservation money that we have to match, and we are through quality of life funding for that project. So we're really excited about that. It's going to be a little bit weather driven since we're opening bids so late. So we'll see how that all goes through the construction process. But our goal is to have all these improvements in place for the next, not only the next recreation softball program year, but also for the next tournament year that's coming up next year. So this will be in place. Since Centennial is a large economic driver for the community, it's nice to be able to see some improvements happening up there on, you know, on a somewhat regular basis. So as people come back, they know we are putting money into the facility. So addressing this project addresses these multiple issues, and we're really excited about it. Any questions?
Questions? Public comments? Okay, that's pretty straightforward. So we'll move right on to 4D, which is the update regarding the BMX track lighting project.
Yes, we are moving along with that. The 60-foot light poles have arrived. They have actually been delivered to the site and are actually at the BMX track. I have been told they're behind their little shed that they have there, or their little clubhouse. The light fixtures are stored in a safe facility here in town. And so all that equipment that's necessary is here. So that's a good thing. If things go well, we will be pouring the concrete footings next week. Usually it takes about a week for the cylinder test to break to make sure it reaches the strength we need for the footings. And as soon as we get the breaks in the concrete cylinders, that tells us that the concrete footings have reached their strength that they need to have. The lights should be stood up and wired up, and we'll be ready to light that track. So it'll be ready for next season's recreational program that Mary Lemming and Carson BMX runs. So we're excited about that. NV Energy has completed all their work. I want to thank Chuck. You got him out there quickly. Thank you. As soon as we had the trench in and the wires in, as soon as we had the trench in and the conduit in, Chuck got them out there quickly. In all fairness, the NV Energy, they moved a lot quicker than AT&T is moving, so thank you. That's right. There goes my cell service. So anyway, they're hoping to be out there later this week, if at least that's my understanding. We're on their schedule. And we are coming quickly to the top of the list, so we're hoping this week or first part of next, the last wire goes down and underground, so we remove that from the track. So there we are with that. Hopefully the lights will be up
you know, right around Thanksgiving time, maybe a little after. So we'll be lighting the track up out there.
Perfect timing. Okay, Commissioner Curtis.
Yeah, when does the season start?
Season starts in March, doesn't it, Scott?
Late March.
So they don't use it at all in the middle of winter?
No.
Okay.
Is it true that you and Roger are going to have the first race out there between the two of you?
I've been working on my bike, too.
Public comments? Any other commissioner comments on this one?
It's great.
Dang, we're getting right down there.
I say it's great. This is another one of those that, you know,
okay, so
I live so long.
Item number 5, this is members' announcements, requests for information. So I've got a couple, I guess, announcements, FYIs. At the last meeting, this is where I failed to do my homework. We talked about smoking ban, and, yeah, the FYI, I guess it didn't get in the FYI section, but maybe next time it will. I aha. Maybe next time we'll put it in just for curiosity's sake, because I did find out that there's 990 cities that have a smoking ban in almost every single state. And I should have found that out before the meeting. But, yeah, my hope is that if those 990 cities can figure it out, that sometime in the future we might revisit that. But it's worth looking at the list because there's 20 cities in Alabama, 20 in Mississippi, even Rock Springs, Wyoming. There.
And
there's
Sean?
Lots and lots of cities on there. Yes.
I thought of you the other day when I read a story. Paris is now banning outdoor smoking in all its public recreation areas, so it's gone overseas.
Wow. And Europe.
So either way.
It is the way things are going. So anyway, just an FYI. Yes.
I have an update on the smoking ban, too. I'm on the board of Partnership Carson City, and they have some tobacco tax money. And they're going to be working with, I think, Megan or somebody on your staff to talk about doing more. They're going to be going around collecting these big old jars of cigarette butts. But I think we're looking at voluntary compliance, really getting in there. For example, asking that those that are watching sports, you know, bringing their kids to a sports event, refrain from smoking voluntarily. That kind of thing. So that'll come here probably next couple months. But just to let you know, it's not over.
I don't think it is over. Within the next several years, it'll probably come to pass. So anyway, when that comes out next time, it's very interesting to see the cities that are doing it. It's not just a California thing. It's a nationwide Mississippi, Alabama thing. So everybody's doing it, and at some point we should consider getting on board. Another announcement, and this was kind of a rumor through the grapevine I heard, and maybe you know a little more about this. The bridges for the Ash Canyon to Kings Canyon Trail have been delivered, I was told.
They're going to be delivered tomorrow, and Scott's crews are going to be helping deliver them to the site on Friday.
Monday.
Oh, Monday. It's been changed to Monday. Okay.
So then they can still get in before the snow flies, it sounds like. Cool.
We expect to have them, you know, completed here in the next couple weeks.
Wow, so we're going to have that done completely.
Yeah.
That's really good news.
Can we put that on the agenda then?
Yep, we'll give you an update. Yeah. Yep, we'll do that.
So would there be a plan to signpost this trail and stuff or wait till next spring for that? Put up the signs, the signposts, the distances?
You know, probably next spring. Yeah, we're probably going to be getting late in the year for that kind of thing, but
yeah, know, I just that's I didn't think
distance post.
Yeah, well, yeah. Directional signs.
Directional signs and that type of thing. Mileage post.
I didn't think we're going to get it done this construction season. So that's real good news. That's great news. So school board liaison, he's not here. I will say that I've been on a little committee. This somewhat has to do with parks and recreation, where we school board they're thinking of pushing back the start times, particularly of high school. The Board of Pediatrics came out and said that high school should be starting at 8:30 or later, and it probably will happen here. I know Megan's on that little committee because it can affect latchkey and various things, but maybe not next year, but the following year the high school might be pushing back their starting time quite a bit in an effort to give teenagers more sleep time. So that was kind of an interesting
thing that might happen and could somewhat impact Parks and Rec programs. Any other members' announcements? Commissioner Kiefer.
Hi, thank you. It's not some, it's a request for information. I noticed, Roger, that the ice rink is being built down on the Nugget parking lot. Do we have a firm opening date?
We're looking at November 28th.
And we're
looking at the season running through February 8th.
Okay. Are we going to have like maybe an unofficial opening where if people show up a couple days early, they might be able to get in?
A little soft opening?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't determined that yet. It kind of depends on how what we're doing on the schedule. And, of course, we'll be taking place or taking part of the, you know, the city's annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony and, you know, having programs going on during that as well. December 5th? Okay.
And, of course, there'll be restrooms, right?
Of course, there'll be restrooms.
I had to put that in.
Well, thank you, Leanne.
I have to squat in the sagebrush.
Okay. Thank you, Roger.
Okay, so anything else? Future announcements? So future agenda items. Item number 6. So, yeah, I've kind of talked about this a couple times, but, and this could be something that we deal with way in the future, but John D. Winter Centennial Park. At some point, I think we want to discuss dropping Centennial. John D. Winter Centennial, it's a mouthful. And in the end, Mr. Winters is never mentioned, ever. So, anyway, something we might want to discuss in the future.
We need to then try to figure out why it was... Sorry, we need to figure out why it was named Centennial in the first place, if we can.
Is that the 100-year anniversary?
Probably came with the... Centennial of the state of Nevada or nation, I'm not sure.
Anyway, anyone else have any future agenda items? Is there any public comments? None? Come on. Okay. Okay. Is there a possible action on adjournment?
So moved.
Second.